Welcome everybody to this CPD coffee with our clinician, soft tissue sarcoma. Thank you very much for coming. I'd really like to introduce you to Rodney Ale, our oncology specialist. And essentially the plan today is that we're gonna have a chat, and I'm probably gonna ask Rodney some questions, some leading questions, and then we'll see where we go. But if any of you have anything you wanna ask, or any subjects or particular things you want us to talk about, then please let us know. You can either send us a message via Teams, and Rodney, hopefully, if you could keep an eye out for that, because if I'm presenting, I won't be able to see that. Send us a message on Teams, or if you wish, you can speak up, but I understand if you don't want to do that. Rodney's got an absolute wealth of experience, and he's I really enjoy working with him. He's really great to work with because essentially he makes it everything easy. And the really great thing for all you guys is you, yeah, that's right, is you can work with him too, because he's available for advice. And I'm sure he's, jump in if I'm wrong, Rodney, you know, he's happy to talk about cases, helpful. Also, if you've got any clients that want a consult with him, he's happy to do that over the video or telephone. So we all can work together, and because some of these cases can be quite challenging.
I think it's an important point to say that especially with this kind of tumor, I'd probably put mast cell tumor in there too, that if all options are on and the owners really want to know what all the possibilities are, it's better to have the conversation prior to, you know, delving into the surgery, because there's some aspects, especially where radiation is involved, where it's important to know what we as radiation oncologists would prefer the surgeons to do if radiation is an option afterwards. So, you know, even if you guys end up just doing the surgery yourselves, an initial discussion about that, where I would say generally medical oncologists are sort of deemed to be general contractors when it comes to what to do with tumors. So we sort of can give some suggestions and advice of what we should do first. Is it surgery? Is it radiation? Is it chemo? And what order we should proceed in, especially again where definitive and curative intent is involved, as opposed to just more of a conservative palliative approach.
Brilliant. Okay, so I thought we'd start off with, we've just got a few pictures that maybe we can draw on, and I suppose here's just a few soft tissue sarcomas that I've seen. And when I was sort of trying to look for some pictures, became apparent to me that I only take the big ones or the challenging ones. But I suppose, you know, a lot of the time it's the ones that are in awkward spots that we're worried about. So it's quite common in practice, isn't it, to have a dog with a lump? And I suppose thinking about how we should approach them sometimes is quite important. What would you recommend, Rodney? If they've got a lump, should they be FNAing them all?
Yes, I would say in the majority of cases, though, we typically do hear that standard comment from the cytopathologist that, you know, there are only a few mesenchymal cells, poorly exfoliating, you know, poor cellularity. If you went into that mass and you're pretty sure you were in the mass and you don't get a bunch of pus or neutrophils or bacteria, and it's a pretty clean aspirate besides a few mesenchymal cells, even if they look well differentiated, we all know that's probably going to be a soft tissue sarcoma, and that's enough, you know, to proceed with a plan. When they're deeper, we're going to have one coming in which is right over the ischium, this huge non-specific mass effect. You know, there you're probably going to need a biopsy because there's no way to know. But something that looks like this, I think an aspirate is enough to be pretty sure, even if you have to do that little bit of a cutting technique with a slightly bigger needle so that you might get, you know, a few more cells or even chunks of tissue, and then, you know, smear them out, you'll still get a pretty good idea of whether it's a mesenchymal tumor or not.
Yeah. So I suppose a lot of the time you'll be seeing, you know, we see tumours in favourable locations, but some of these ones maybe are looking like they might be a bit more challenging to remove surgically. So I suppose if we're thinking that we've got a soft tissue sarcoma, what should we do next? Should, you know, is the next step a biopsy? Should we do staging? What would you recommend?
So typically I will tell people that these are tumors that are usually a single isolated event on a dog. Most often see them on a pedicular skeleton, and so we believe they're probably from some sort of micro trauma to a nerve blood vessel that's, you know, sets this off. It's not typically a tumor we see in multifocal locations, except for in ridgebacks. They've actually found in young ridgebacks multifocal soft tissue sarcs, which may be a genetic issue. So I tell people that these are certainly worth treating. I actually will even say these are rarely life-threatening, because most of them are intermediate to low grade. And even if we can't cure them with that initial surgery, which is always going to be our best shot, we can still control them for prolonged periods of time. And that could be done these days. Surgery alone usually, you know, is unless it's higher up on the body and unless our surgeons feel like they can get a margin on it. If people say they can do only one thing and nothing else, surgery is still going to be the best bet if feasible. And there you might end up going with a flap procedure if that's indicated. But it's always that deep margin that's going to be problematic. So sometimes even not doing the surgery and going to palliative radiation, which can slow growth, stop growth, control growth for year to a year and a half, based on a Swiss study from a number of years back. Sometimes it shrinks it enough that then you can do a surgery afterwards. So there are a number of different options, you know, based on a sequence. But if we can get that aspirate that says mesenchymal tumor, I don't think we need to do a biopsy. If it's deeper or it's been growing quickly, then it becomes important because of the possibility of it being high grade, where surgery might not be curative and we would be concerned about metastasis. Though even metastatic disease is only probably usually as high as 25% in these tumors. But you definitely want to have that staging done. Most importantly, chest, secondarily abdomen, prior to doing any sort of definitive therapy.
So what would be your preferred approach to staging, Rodney?
Again, it's going to be a timing issue, you know, where the clients are, what they can manage, and what the referring vet's capabilities are. There's no question that CT scan is our best choice. I'm not sure, Mick, if we did a CT scan, that you'd want to actually scan the site and whether that would help you in your surgical planning. But I would always say CT first. And usually we can get CT done, you know, pretty much of the entire body, anywhere between, you know, 1,500 and 2,000, I would say.
Yeah.
But if money is an issue or distance is an issue, then minimum, I would say, chest x-ray. And then because we typically see this in older dogs, I think abdominal ultrasound is important just to make sure there's nothing else going on. Not that I would expect this to spread to the abdomen, but yeah. I remember a case that already had surgery, came to me for definitive curative intent radiation, and we hadn't done the ultrasound. We were backwards and forwards. Eventually, we decided to do it, and we found primary renal carcinoma in this dog, and that dog probably only had 3 to 6 months to go, so we certainly didn't do the radiation.
And, yeah, I think with your question about the CT, sometimes the surgical site's in the field, because if it's over the thorax or the abdomen, so that's easy. And, certainly for some distal limb tumours, I think sometimes it can be, if there's any question that, oh, how deep are they, which tissues are involved, then it can be useful. And if you're CT in the rest of the dog, then normally you can sort of contrive to have the area, the limb as part of the scan, I think. Generally, it doesn't tend to change what we do, but I think it, in certain cases, it can be very useful. Yeah. Okay. And do feel free to ask me some questions if you wish, Rodney.
Yeah, sure.
So I suppose with regards to the sort of, I often get asked by vets whether they should take a biopsy first. And I also find myself sometimes thinking, should I be biopsying this? And you're absolutely right. If most of the time, 90% of the time, if I know that it's a soft tissue sarcoma based on the aspirate, then I don't really see much value in doing the biopsy. I think that for me, the biopsy is important if it will change what my treatment will be.
Agreed. Yeah. Very important point. Yeah.
So, and sometimes that may be actually the grade doesn't matter so much, but the staging is probably more important because, if we do staging and the dog's got evidence of metastasis, then at least in my simple surgeon's brain, it feels like we don't need to, going crazy with surgery probably isn't going to do what we want it to. It's not a cure of the dog, and maybe associated with increased morbidity. So sometimes that will push me towards a more conservative surgery with the expectation that we're not going to achieve a cure anyway. So that's fair.
And I would bring up the point, which is what you and I were discussing yesterday, Mickey, about, who do these cases go to first? I think very often when surgery is anticipated, it'll go straight to surgery. Sometimes it's a lump and therefore it comes to me first. And that point I made earlier about, what the options are up to and including curative intent, I'm sure many of you guys out there will actually, mention to a client that, for a tumor like this, we could probably cure it with amputation. And of course, amputation is a scary thing for clients to think about. But I do always bring it up in the beginning, just so that I've laid the seed, even if we don't go that way, because, as I said, these are rarely life-threatening unless they're higher grade and they happen to metastasize. But, amputation could be in the future when it comes to a point that this thing, continues to grow. We don't have any other choices, and it's open and it's ruptured and bleeding and oozing. And that's not an easy management issue for clients. And so I tell them, you may get to a point of having to say, well, either I've got to put my pet down now, which is a healthy pet with a ruptured lump, or I've got to amputate. And if amputation is a consideration, I always tell them the quickest, easiest, cheapest way to get the best possible long-term outcome is amputation. And I'll add to that the dogs don't care. They go to sleep with four legs, wake up with three, and off they go. I don't think I can count on one hand dogs that have really had significant problems after being amputated because they're now three-legged. And I always say that our orthopedic guys will, our surgeons will do a good orthopedic exam and, on any amputation candidate and make sure all the other limbs are okay and suggest whether they think this dog would be, a decent amputation candidate. But that should be in the conversation. But I'm not sure I would do it. I think I would let Mickey try to take this off and maybe consider radiation afterwards. I wouldn't be in a rush to amputate my dog.
Are you looking at this one on the left here?
Yeah.
So I suppose this sort of brings us back to this, how should we manage these distal tumors? Because they are typically large, and we know that ideally we want to get wide margins. And if this is a low to, in my mind, if this is a low to intermediate grade tumor and it hasn't spread, then if we can remove it completely, we can cure the animal, which would be great. But obviously life isn't always like that, and we have to make compromises. So there is that conversation about, can we get margins and without an amputation, and then if we can't, what are our options? And I suppose that's where talking to an oncologist is really helpful, because they can give us a lot more information about other options in those instances. Should we talk about surgical margins, Rodney, or should we start talking about radio?
Well, I think the surgical margin discussion sort of leads into the radiation part, right? Because we have, I mean, let's take that tumor there that we're talking about here. The chances, I would have to say, the chances, even I can tell, not as a surgeon, that deep margin's going to be difficult. I know there's ways to take a wide skin margin and get something, covering that. But chances that of getting that 2 to 3 centimeter margin deep is very slim. It was interesting in the States, where when the economy was really bad and people couldn't afford radiation, many of us went to a short sort of palliative course of radiation, because we felt that some radiation was probably better than nothing. And so when they couldn't do a definitive course of 18 to 20 treatments for 6 to 8,000, we could usually do a short course of maybe 3 to 5 treatments for 25 to 3,000, and still derive benefit. And a number of studies have actually been done on those short courses, where we typically quote, if we can remove it with margins, we have a 75 to 95% control rate for 3 to 5 years with surgery alone. If we've got narrow margins or, marginal excisions, then we do radiation, definitive radiation, which is the 18 to 20 treatments. We get the same, 75 to 95% for 3 to 5 years, depending on which studies you're looking at. And that doesn't mean we don't cure. It just means that was the end of the study at 3 to 5 years. But if we do surgery that's a marginal excision, so say this one would just be a local excision without doing flaps or anything, but just getting good apposition of skin without tension and getting the majority of the disease, and then doing even palliative radiation, so the short course, we're getting 75% control for 2 to 3 years, which is better than radiation alone, because we're treating with radiation to the most sensitive cells, which are those out on the edge, the resistant part of the tumor. If we had to radiate this without anything, it may not shrink at all, or it may shrink very slowly over 6 to 9 months, but it'll stop growing and won't progress for 9 to 15 months. So those decisions about being able to tell the surgeon how aggressive do we want to get with the surgery, and is it better to go for the surgery even with a flap to try for a wide margin, or do we radiate first and maybe shrink it, maybe calm it down, back off the blood flow, and then come back to surgery with a smaller, more well-defined tumor that often these that seem attached will become detached from the deep tissue after a course treatment of radiation, and then they can be more easily removed.
That's really interesting, because I've not ever worked somewhere with radiation, so I don't have a lot of experience of radiation then surgery. But certainly, I think my approach has often been that if I can remove it with wide margins, and I guess most of the time when we're dealing with soft tissue sarcomas, and in my brain, wide margins are 2 centimeters lateral margins and then 1 fascial plane deep to the tumor, which often is probably the best you can do sometimes. And that seems to, does that seem okay, Rodney, to you? Would you be happy with that?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, the fascial plane is probably more pertinent for mast cell, which doesn't penetrate fascial planes. Sometimes these do. because they follow vessels or nerves, those, you know, perivascular or perineural tumors. So, you know, I would say there are definitely a number of cases. There's a really old paper, you're probably familiar with it, which looked at marginal or incomplete excisions, and there were a percentage of those that didn't come back.
Yeah.
So that's always a possibility. So I always tell people, as hard as it is for me to admit as a medical and radiation oncologist, that surgeons have the best chance to cure.
Oh, so, thank you. Can you say that again?
So if, like I said in the beginning, if there's one option and they can afford one thing and a surgeon feels like there's a possibility they could get it, then I would say surgery first. We always have the potential to bring in radiation if it starts to recur.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's about having a plan, isn't it? Because, you know, if, and also it's about what the owner wants. And I think some of these distal limb tumors are challenging because you look at them and you think, well, I'm not going to get that with wide margins in a month of Sundays. What should I do? And I think what I always say is what I always try and avoid is a sort of a halfway. So I'd much rather do a surgery where it goes smoothly and we get the lump, we get gross disease out, but we don't cause a big wound, rather than, you know, making a big hole but not actually getting an adequate margin. So sort of going halfway sort of always seems like a slightly disappointing outcome.
But yeah, I would definitely agree with that. And I think it is much more difficult here because of the limited availability of radiation. I mean, you know, I was the only radiation oncologist in Southern California when I started, but by the time I left, there were probably a dozen different facilities, and it was much more easily available for people. And certainly insurance has helped that. Here, it's not as easy. So that's where that initial conversation comes in, that if we can establish that a client is prepared to consider radiation and all the logistics involved with that and the cost, then that can give you a better feeling for what is feasible and what we should do with surgery. But if we'd establish that radiation is not a possibility one way or another, then I would definitely say you go for the best possible surgery. And now that we have evidence that metronomic chemo and even the tyrosine kinase inhibitors can inhibit the growth of these tumors, if they are initially removed and we're just dealing with the microenvironment, you know, of the extended disease in the soft tissues, that can even extend control time. So we have something, you know, besides radiation if that's not possible.
Perfect. Yeah, absolutely. Because for me, it's a lot of these distal tumors. I sort of recommend to clients, if we're not going to get them with wide margins, so we're better off doing a more limited surgery and then ideally sending them for radiotherapy. So what if these guys were planning to do that for a tumor, what would they need to? Are there any tips for sort of getting it right for referral for radiotherapy after surgery? What they can do
in terms of the surgery itself?
Well, potentially. I mean, I suppose from my point of view, I was thinking sometimes does a radiation oncologist like to have a picture of the tumor before and after?
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yes, I think they would, because when we plan the radiation, we want to plan it based on where the tumor was. If I don't get that information, I plan it based on the incision line. And that's always something important to remember, is that, you know, the potential for contamination. So, you know, whatever incision line you leave needs to be the basis of our treatment planning, and treating that incision line plus a margin beyond the incision line. So sometimes, you know, I don't know, in this one, you might need, 5 centimeter incision either side of that mass in order to get it closed nicely. But that's going to give us, you know, a 15 centimeter length incision that we have to radiate the entire thing. And that is possible. It's definitely possible. What we want the surgeons to think about is the fact that we do need to radiate that area plus the margin, but we can't radiate directly across the leg, because if we do that, we'll collapse the lymphatics and we'll get swelling of the distal limb. So we've always got to leave a strip of skin outside of the incision line. So if the tumor is back here, we want the incision line caudal so that we can leave a strip up front here as far away as possible, because, you know, do we have from this edge 3 centimeters in order to really, you know, save the skin? And we'll use clips to clip the skin and pull it away from the leg in order to be able to treat as much of the area as possible. So we want straight lines. We don't want an incision this way or something that folds around from here, you know, to the opposite side of the elbow. You know, it needs to be pretty symmetric because we're trying to draw a frame around that entire area. And that becomes important on the side of the body. I was talking to Mick about this. You know, typically the incision lines are going to go this way, but that means we have to, especially over the chest wall, we have to radiate round corners. And when we're doing chest wall, we typically are going to use electron therapy, which is based on a flat surface. So when we have a curved surface, we cannot be sure of the dose distribution in the areas that are further away from, you know, the highest point. So in fact, we want an incision line this way so that it's along a flat line.
And then they can see you pointing, unfortunately.
Oh, they can't?
No.
Oh.
Only I can point.
Oh, well, that's a pain.
Sorry.
So in other words, we want a horizontal line along the chest wall as opposed to a vertical line of incision. If radiation is going to happen. If it's not going to happen, then you want to do your best surgical margin, a surgical excision, which is going to be a vertical excision on the chest wall.
Yeah. I think it's always probably worth remembering as well. I always try and remember this, but not always successfully, is that anything that you leave, any scar, is considered part of the contaminated area and needs radiating. So actually there's some value in maybe not going crazy with your incision, because it just means that there's going to be more requirement for radiotherapy or radiation on the dog potentially. So particularly if you're placing drains or other things, make sure they're as close as possible to the edge of the incision.
Yes, agreed. And remembering that the disease that's out on the edge that is growing actively is the most sensitive to the radiation. So we will take care of the disease that's out on the margin. We want you to remove the bulky gross tumor and leave the rest to us.
Cool. Rodney, you mentioned chemotherapy, metronomic chemotherapy. Could you, I don't know if everyone's familiar with that. I remember I can remember a time when I didn't have a clue what that was. Can you tell us a bit what that means, please?
Yeah, so it's developed over the past maybe even 10 years in human medicine and, you know, more recently in veterinary. But essentially, we typically talk about conventional chemo as the maximum tolerated dose, so MTD chemotherapy. That's cytotoxic. We are trying to kill cancer cells and of course, hopefully not kill the patient. When we talk about metronomic, we talk about MID, which is minimum inhibitory dose. And so this is more about inhibiting tumor by treating the microvasculature. So it's the area around the tumor where those vessels are coming in to feed. All the tumors are creating new blood vessels, and in an adult patient, unless they're healing from something, that's the only place that there's neovascularization. It's also targeting microenvironment with respect to actually enhancing an immune response and inducing tumor dormancy. So there are drugs that have been developed and found to be able to do that. And so if we can get the majority of the disease removed and just have the microenvironment, which actually has been shown to include that pseudo capsule. So even if we get that typical shelling out type of thing where we believe we've left a pseudo capsule, this metronomic chemo has the ability to control growth even in that area. So before, when we would just leave it and wait for it to grow back in 2 to 4, maybe 6 months, we can use these drugs. And if they work well enough and the tumor is not towards a higher grade and growing too fast, because this approach is best in low-grade disease, we've been able to double control time. So take it out to, 6 to 8, maybe even 12 months of control. And then you might be faced with another surgery where an area has managed to evade or find a way around the metronomic and have to do another debulking surgery. And then you go for another 6 months, of control. So the drugs that we're mostly using are non-steroidal anti-inflammatories and cyclophosphamide at doses around 15 to 20 milligrams per meter squared. Typically, we use it every other day. Some of the studies have used it daily, but only for short time frames. And people who've done it longer have found myelosuppression or end up with the cytoxin cystitis. Whereas the every other day, we've managed patients for well over a year with those kinds of doses. But there's things like thalidomide now that's come in, and that is available through BOVA. We are looking at even adding tyrosine kinase inhibitors to those kinds of drugs.
Cool. So obviously, you nicely pointed out that most of these are surgical patients until proven otherwise. What are there any times when we can use sort of more traditional chemotherapy? Is that ever beneficial for these dogs?
Conventional chemo, for the most part, is not going to do very much for the intermediate to low grade tumors. Mm. Generally, we're looking at, higher grade. The faster they grow, the faster they die. When you're giving chemo as a bolus, and the main drug we would probably use is doxorubicin, it's in the body for 48 hours. If cells are not turning over, they're not going to die. So, the higher grade ones that have an increased potential to metastasize, certainly what we call the epithelioid sarcomas, which tend to be high grade. So that's hemangiosarc, liposarc, histiocytic sarcoma. Those will tend to be on the higher grade side with an increased metastatic potential. It doesn't mean that local therapy is not indicated. We can actually still get good long-term control of the local disease with our surgery and our radiation therapy. But the chemo, even though it may not do much for the primary tumor, has the potential to control distant metastasis.
Yeah. So if you had a dog with a high-grade tumor that we could, we could tackle surgically, that would be something that you might consider post-operative chemo on as well, would it?
Correct.
Yeah.
I would probably, in terms of timing, I would probably have you do the surgery first, then do chemotherapy. So we're not waiting too long to do adjuvant chemo. And then after chemo, consider radiation therapy either then or at evidence of local recurrence.
Right. Okay. Yeah. With you. Okay.
That same would apply to a carcinoma. That's how they treat mammary cancer, breast cancer in women. They'll do surgery first, if it's high grade, chemo, and then do radiation of the area plus the nodes.
My understanding is that when we're thinking about the metronomic chemotherapy, that's no good for the high grade tumors, is it?
Correct. Growing too quickly.
Yeah. So it's great for low to intermediate grade, but no use for the high grade ones.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they've actually looked at it for osteosarc and hemangiosarc. No benefit.
So what if I'm doing my surgery, I'm very pleased. It makes me sound quite arrogant, doesn't it? So I've done my surgery, it's gone well, and I've got the margins I was hoping for. Obviously, we're going to send all these sarcomas away for histopathology and to assess the margins. What do I do if, what should we think about doing if the margins come back as incomplete?
So hopefully we've had that discussion about radiation therapy. And we can talk about that as an option. If we haven't talked about it, we can then talk to the clients. And I would say, in terms of predictable benefit, radiation would definitely be the next choice. And that can start anywhere from 2 weeks onwards after suture removal. If you used a flap, we want to be sure that you're comfortable that the flap is taken and it's healed well, because otherwise we may affect that, because radiation is also anti-angiogenic. So that would apply to metronomic too. If you've done a flap, we would want to wait until you're comfortable with the graft. So radiation for sure, either definitive or palliative, is better than anything else. But if not those, then metronomic chemo.
But that's assuming it's not amenable to a revision surgery, I take it.
Oh, correct. But you said...
Sorry, I didn't give me an accurate scenario, did I?
Yes. You said you were happy with your surgery, so if you're happy, I'm happy.
Okay.
If you told me that you
well,
could...
Well, I wasn't until I got the pathology report.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, I would imagine that if you're going for the best surgery you can, you've removed as much as you think is reasonable to remove without compromising the pet, right?
Sure. Yeah. Okay.
And we're getting referrals from referring vets. I always throw out that question. You know, do you feel comfortable taking more out, or you think that a boarded surgeon may be able to take more out? Because if a revision surgery is feasible, then again, that's still going to be a quicker, easier, cheaper way to go than the radiation. But if it's not, then we certainly don't, again, I always tell clients, we don't want to make the treatment worse than the disease. So I don't want to cause the dog to be lame because we try to take too much out.
Yeah, absolutely. Cool. You got any questions for me, Rodney? Do you have a look at some?
Not so far.
Okay, well, I've got a few pictures. We can have a look at them. Are there any questions come through on the...
Nothing's come through on the chat. Okay. I hope you guys know that on Teams you can use that chat option to write down messages, if you like, to type messages out, but feel free to unmute yourselves and ask questions.
Oh, someone was nearly, thought someone was going to. So I suppose these are just a few random pictures of sarcomas that I found. You know, for me, this is a reasonably nice one. Obviously, it's quite big, isn't it? It's in a slightly awkward spot. But, you know, I'd look at this and think, well, I can probably get reasonable margins on this. I can get a good reasonable layer of muscle or muscle fascia underneath, although perhaps that may not be 100% guaranteed. So there's our 2 centimeter margins, and there's our hole, and that closed fine. That dog healed really well. So as we said, I would always send the lumps away. Occasionally, I suppose, you know, the reality of general practice is that sometimes the clients can't afford or don't want to afford to pay for histopathology. So I think if you're in any... If you've got a case you're a bit worried about and you've removed the lump and you think, well, I'm not sure about this one, I often recommend that people just pop it in a histopot and put it in the cupboard, because then if it grows back, you can just send it for histo later, I think, and you might feel quite smug about that. Obviously, you've got to be careful you don't have a cupboard full of slowly pickling bits of dog, but I think that can be quite a useful way of doing things.
Yeah, just I think that one and this here, these are both tumors that probably would benefit from some radiation prior. you know, even if it's a short course. Again, you know, logistics and cost would come into that. But, you know, there's always this concern about doing surgery in a radiated field. That is something to consider. I don't know if you've had to do any of those, Mick, but,
no.
You know, I've certainly had surgeons complain about that.
Yeah, no, people have been often very reluctant to send things to surgery after they had radiotherapy or do the surgery. And I think that it does, you know, there is a suggestion that healing is quite significantly affected by the radiation.
It is, because you've backed off blood flow and you've induced some fibrosis in the area, but that's especially with definitive. And so yeah. I would very rarely do definitive treatment prior to surgery. Unless we weren't planning on doing surgery and it shrinks and does well and starts to grow back at some point, and then you could do surgery sort of down the road, though there may still be some residual changes in the tissue. But a short course of treatment is not going to affect that area quite as much.
Yeah.
And as long as it's a reasonably well vascularized area, you know, a short course prior would make that surgery easier. But then there's always that question of, should we let you take it off first and then do radiation, or should we radiate first? Generally,
the next question.
We let surgeons go first. Yeah.
Yeah, thank you.
So, a pleasure.
So this is a little, I think it was a schnauzer. I do remember this case very well. And they didn't want radiotherapy, didn't want amputation. They wanted me to try and get wide margins on this, I think, low to intermediate grade on this little dog's leg. And, you know, that's the sort of defect you end up with. One of my colleagues at the time persuaded me that he would be able to close this with a flap, and it didn't close very well. It was all a bit sad. But actually, you know, we treated it as an open wound, and it healed really nicely, and the little dog did really well. So, but probably what would have been better would have been a more limited surgery and radiotherapy, in my opinion.
Yeah, I would agree.
This is another. So this is a case. This was a Great Dane, and he had a ruptured soft tissue sarcoma here. And I think this was difficult. The owners didn't want an amputation. They didn't feel that he would cope with that. So, you know, you look at this and you're never going to, I don't think anyone can get this off with wide margins. So my plan for this, and you said, was to remove it, remove the mass, remove the wound, and then send it for radiotherapy. And, you know, and it becomes a slightly nicer surgical experience in the sense that we can remove this and close the hole. And you can see that you can see the impression in the tumor from the dog's flexor tendons and whatnot. And, you know, there's actually no way you could get any margin on this without disabling the animal and probably leaving a very large wound or without an amputation. So I think these are the ones where I think radiotherapy is really good.
Yes. This would do well. The only comment I would say about radiation here is that, you know, we're going to get our margin that you could not get. Both deep and wide.
Oh, yeah.
But we would probably have to radiate some pad.
Okay.
And the pads, you know, do react. We'll see them, you know, peel. And they usually peel really reasonably well but without discomfort. But if then the dog starts licking and at the peeling pad and pulling pieces off, and then, you know, creates a more acute wound, then they can become uncomfortable. But it's temporary. Those acute effects, you know, come up the last week or two of treatment, and in a week or two, all resolves. But they can be a little uncomfortable, and I do always tell clients about that. But the pad will come back, and everything will be fine.
Great. I think that's the thing, because we don't have a lot of radiation in the UK, or haven't had. We've got a lot more than we had when I was training, I think. You know, it's something that we're not very familiar with, I think, often. So it's really good to get that kind of experienced insight into the sort of pros and cons of it, I think.
So I got a question from Michaela.
Oh, yeah.
She said that what we're talking about sounds amazing, so thank you for that. But she was wondering about the best fine needle aspirate technique. You know, so do I use a syringe? Do you aspirate? Do you only use the needle and spray on the slide and let it dry, or do you squash? And, you know, what's the best way to preserve the cells if we're sending it to the pathologist? So, yes, good question. And often it's determined by trial and error, shall we say. So I will first try to use a regular technique, which will be, you know, fine needle aspiration, 22-gauge needle, put the needle into the tumor, probably, you know, in, take it out, move in a different direction. I don't want to change the direction while I'm inside the tumor because that'll cause cutting and bleeding. So in and out, gentle aspiration, spray it out on a slide, see what I get. If it looks like I don't get anything out of it, because some of them are dense and you get nothing, then typically I will use a slightly larger needle. So I'll probably go to a 21 or even a 20. And then when I'm trying to get cells, then I'll just use the needle. So I'm always sort of using it almost as a cutting technique. And just pushing it in again in a few different directions, and then squirt it out. And I generally always do try to smear stuff out. If I get a big chunk, then you can kind of do impressions with that little piece that sticks to the one slide, and you can do impressions, you know, in a number of different places. And of course, I tend to look at them myself. And so within, you know, 5 minutes, I've stained it and had a look at it and see if I can see what I need to see. And usually I can decide for myself that, boy, yeah, there's a bunch of mesenchymal cells in there. Some of them look a little bit hot. I'm not seeing any evidence of infection, inflammation. So I know what it is. But sometimes they don't stain well, especially the nucleus. So I can't tell if there's nucleolar activity. So then there are some slides I'll send into the lab. And just quick drying, it should be sufficient, you know, to preserve it. So it's sort of the trial and error, but you want to just know that you got something representative, you know, of the area. And if you literally can't, which has happened to me, then you got to do a needle biopsy or a small little surgical incisional biopsy. If it's, you know, dermal, you might be able to get away with a Baker's biopsy punch. Try not to make any holes too big or incisions too big. We've all seen these soft tissue socks push right through your suture line if they're growing at a reasonable pace. So hopefully that answered your question.
Brilliant. Thank you. Any other questions via the messaging, or would anyone like to voice them? I thought someone was going to then.
Okay, well, I think she said thank you.
Oh, brilliant. Thank you. Well, thank you very much all for coming. I hope this has been interesting, and it's something a bit different. I thought it's quite good to hear people's brains working, really, to some extent. So thank you very much, Rodney. That's been tremendous. We'll see. Maybe we'll see you all again another time.
Yeah, please feel free to call anytime, whether you're referring or not. You know, I could try to help you at least know what the options are to speak to your owner. And I'm always happy to chat to an owner and give them perspective on what they're dealing with, you know, even if they don't come to us. I want to at least make sure that they're comfortable with their decision, even if it's to do nothing. And just so you know, our full consults used to be like 200, I think, but when we're doing the video and phone stuff, which has now, you know, become state of the art, It's only 135 to have a chat for anything up to an hour. So, you know, it's a quick and easy thing to do at any time.
That's excellent value, Rodney.
Well, it's my pleasure.
Thank you.
Especially when I'm sitting on my couch.
Yeah, this is the new way of working.
The new norm, yes.
Yeah, the new normal, yes, yes. Brilliant. Well, I hope you all have a great day. Thank you for coming, and yeah, cheerio.
Bye. Thanks, Mick.
Thank you very much.
Oh,
you're welcome.
Thank you.